listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Wake Up Hollywood, this is your host with the most, Nikki Kalula. We're going to jump right into this interview with writer, director, producer, and radio DJ, Mr. Mark Sutherland. Say hello, Mark. How are you?
I need a longer resume, don't I?
You need more titles. You haven't filled enough. You're working too hard is more like it.
I just need to focus. I need to focus.
Well, you know what? You and I met a long time ago when you were doing radio in Hermosa Beach. And you've had a storied history in radio. Let's talk a little bit about that. How did you kind of like get into radio? What made you love radio? Did you have family listening to old school radio back in the day, or did you just fall in love with it at an early age?
I fell in love with it at an early age, listening to a little transistor radio. And, you know, it's the first thing that a kid actually has that's his own. You know what I mean? And it kind of, and it brings the rest of the world into you. And I used to love listening to that at night, you know, these crackly stations that I could from some of the big cities. I grew up in Columbus, Ohio, and we had some good radio here, but Chicago had much better radio. And, you know, I'd listen to like Chicago radio on this little transistor radio as a kid. And then I sent in a Christmas wish to a local radio station and asked them, everybody was asking, you know, everybody else was asking for boats and cars and to pay the rent and stuff. And I was a 10-year-old kid. And I just wanted to be on the radio. And they're like, oh, well, this won't cost us anything. Bring the kid in. And I was good.
That's
and
amazing. Unfortunately,
and it really, really screwed me up because then at 10 years old, I just had such an enormous rush. And then they took me back. The next year, I did it again. And then pretty much at that point, it was in my blood. By the time I was 15, I was working at a local radio station. And then in college, I was working part-time. They kept offering me full-time, and eventually they offered me something I just couldn't turn down, so I put college on hold, and then moved around the country for a while, did Orlando and Houston, and then out to Los Angeles, and
were you doing radio music? Were you doing a little combination?
It was mostly music, a lot of rock radio and top 40 CHR, and then kids radio, because Disney hired me to help build the Radio Disney Network, which is what brought me out to Los Angeles. So
that's crazy.
And so I was for 5 years, I was the talent behind the microphone in first at MGM Studios in Disney World. And then they moved us out to Los Angeles to be a part of the whole thing and build us a studio under the rocket rods, if you can imagine.
What?
Where we broadcast to, you know, all over the world, 51 stations here in America and all over the world. And so that's what brought me out to Los Angeles. And then, you know, I stayed for 20 years in Los Angeles, launched my own radio network, somewhere in there too. And after about 20 years in LA, I just needed to decompress, and my dog was getting old, and decided to hit the road for what we thought would be a couple of, you know, like 3 weeks or so, and it ended up being 3 years.
Now, you know, I also have a bulldog, and I remember, you know, I was like, you know what, I love my dog, and I'm so moved that you made a movie about your dog's bucket list after this diagnosis of, you know, like, oh, your dog only has this much to live.
Well, we actually did it. So we did it before. We didn't get the cancer diagnosis is in the film. That didn't happen until the third year. But what happened was that her arthritis was creeping up on her. And I'd had two other whippets that I'd lost at 13. And she was 14 at that point, Abby was. So I figured, you know, look, she's going downhill now. This is the last chance we're going to have to do this sort of thing. She was a dog that just always wanted to do stuff. And she came to work with me every day, and she'd lay on the couch while I did radio shows and stuff. So
I remember seeing her in Hermosa Beach. You brought her to the station there.
Yeah. But part of the key was I did it before we got some horrible prognosis, because at that point it's really too late, or at least it's too late to do the sort of thing that I did, because, and part of what was super important to me was that we were only going to do this as long as she enjoyed it. If she was having fun, then we'd do it. And but that's what was so amazing about it, because about 3 weeks into it, it became super obvious that that she was aging in reverse. Wow. And instead of going downhill, she found a reason to live. That's and it changed the entire arc of the film and the entire arc of my life and the entire arc of her life.
What's so incredible too, it's like you had the vision to do this story, maybe because of the other two dogs that you had in your life, and you kind of knew you wanted to do something special. And I have to tell you, it's like I was emotional. You know, you sent me an advanced kind of edit, and because I emailed you and I said, I don't care what is at stake. I want to put a song in this movie because I love my dog so much, and I'm so moved that you love your dog so much to have made this movie. And you did it on like a little bit of crowdfunding, a little bit of savings, and a little bit of just like putting everything into this project. And that's so commendable. And that's something that a lot of people don't have a lot of the same courage or just compassion for their animal to do. And that's what moved me. And I mean, I had just seen the trailer and I was like, you know, there's few things where I feel that compelled to write, you know, to someone say, I want to be a part of this. And,
And I really appreciated that too, because you're super talented.
Thanks,
and,
man.
And an awful lot of people reached out to me and wanted to be a part of this. And, you know, there was only a room for a select few. But your music really worked, because your music is it's emotional, you feel it, but it's also hopeful.
Right.
And that was super important for this film, because there's, you know, there's a tough scene or two
there's many tough scenes.
It's sad.
Yeah.
But most of it's fun and happy sad. Like there's some happy sad moments. Overall I think it's fun and then happy sad.
Your
music really worked for it.
Thank you so much. And you know what? You know, I have to give you a huge compliment. I think I also emailed you this, but you know, I've had my music placed in films and TVs, films and TV shows for almost 15 years. And you can never control what the director is going to do or what the music supervisor is going to do. And a lot of times they don't really use the song as a way of painting a scene or making it
They'll use it as a quick transition or something like that.
It's like almost like a waste. Like, it's great, the cool thing to be involved in this, but the biggest compliment I can give you, and I really, really mean this, in the 18 years that I've had songs synced, yours is by far my favorite, because it was synced so perfectly and beautifully. You featured the song in such a like dynamic way, and it also painted the scene of the story in such a cool way. It was a great segue. It was just everything about it. I was watching it and I was like, this is why I want to make music, because of people like yourself that are making art and we're trying to make something that's maybe bigger than the both of us, you know?
Well, I really appreciate the compliment, because again, there aren't a lot of people that it would have worked for, but your music was right for the film. And your music goes a little deeper, but again, at the same point, and also it had that forward movement, which is real important in a film. Cause a lot of times people write something that's beautiful, but it's kind of dirgy.
Right.
And then it slows the film down.
Right.
And yours was just perfect. And here's the other thing too, and this is probably why you liked it, as a radio guy and a music guy myself, I edit to the music. Okay. A lot of editors they'll put something together and then they'll slap music under it and they may tweak it just a teeny bit, but the visual drives it. And the way I do it is the opposite. It's like, I look at the music as the spine of the film and I figure out what that is first. And yes, I have some images over top, but ultimately, the music comes first and I edit that in, and then I edit the visual and the audio to the music.
Well, not only that too, it's like you edit it in such a tasteful way that was still true to the music. And that's something that most people don't do. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I see an edit of something where they use a song and I'm like, that doesn't even fit the scene, or the song edit, the section that they use doesn't even line up with the scene the way it could. And that's what I loved about what you did. I was like, you did things so tastefully. And
Fade Away is the perfect song for any film where you're in a car lost in the Sequoia National Forest, trying to find one of the largest trees in the world so your dog can pee on it. Yours is perfect for that.
I want to ask you about that scene real quick, because it took her a couple tries to inspire her to, yeah, take a pee on the tree.
And it was hilarious too, because we drove all the way from LA.
Right.
And there was a forest fire. Now, it wasn't so bad that we weren't risking our lives, but it pretty much closely open, but it was all firemen in the area. And we were driving in and it was just like, look, hopefully she'll go. And when we reach this tree, and if she doesn't, then we wasted a day and a half, because we drove up, spent the night and did it first thing the next morning. But I mean, it was so seat of the pants, and we were laughing the whole time going, oh my God, what if we drove all this way and it all comes down to her. And so we had to, every time she whined, I let her out of the car, and I was scared to death that she was going to go before we got to the big tree.
Right.
'Cause then it would be totally anticlimactic. And she, and she was a 14-year-old dog. She wouldn't have anything left in the tank to go when we got to the tree. So it would have blown the whole thing. But it worked. She had me get out of the car two or three times, but it was a false alarm every time. And I kept coming back to the car, and we rolled the cameras, and we're just laughing, going, another false alarm. And then literally as we're rolling up to the big tree, then she's whining again. And I'm like, it's okay. We're here. And I got her out of the car and went up, and it took a minute or two. She had to go all around this enormous tree. And she went right at the base of this tree. And at that point it was like, you know what? There's a little bit of magic in this. And there were so many things that you were like that.
You could tell how joyful you were about it. And like that, what was so cool is, like, I think it was one of the first things you did off the bucket list, right?
It was, well, technically we started the film with a couple weeks before that with her on a sailboat. 'Cause I had some friends with a sailboat who asked me to go out. I said, can I bring my dog? And they said, yeah, sure. And just again, on a whim, we decided to put her behind the wheel to let her stand this beer 40 and let her put her paws over the and sail this gorgeous yacht. And she loved it. We had a GoPro right in front of her, and I didn't realize how much she liked it, or I should say loved it, until I got home and I looked at some of the video. I'm like, oh my God, I haven't seen her this happy in years. She was absolutely in her element. Maybe it was because all the wonderful things to smell, the breeze, doing something new, or doing it with me. I don't know what it was, but
she absolutely
loved it. And that was the point where I sort of had this epiphany where it was like, you know what, let's figure out what else she likes to do. And again, I just figured it'd be for a couple of weeks or whatever. But then I noticed this enormous change in her. It was when we were in Canada, because we got a private island in Canada and took her up there for a couple of weeks. And she just became a different dog. And it was like, there's something really happening here. And then we went back to Columbus, which is where I am now, spent a little time with family. And we thought, you know what, this is more centrally located. I put my stuff in storage in California. I can stay out as long as I want to. And stayed here for a little while, and did a few things from here. And she's, and again, just the more we got out and did stuff, the better she was. And then we put this in a short early trailer, and it went viral almost immediately tune of almost 5 million views.
Wow.
And so at that point we realized, wow, we have something here, because not only is it something that we're loving doing, and it's taken us down a route that we never expected to be on, we're responding to it. And at that point it was just like, you know what, let's do this for a while, and for as long as she's enjoying it, and have some fun and see the world together. So I basically put the rest of my life on hold, and she put the rest of her life on hold, And we just went out and did ridiculous things together and just had the time of our lives. And again, it, so that 3 weeks became 3 years, and she lived until it's, you know, it's spoiler alert. She lived until she was 16 and a half.
Wow.
And,
crazy.
And I never would have expected it, but we did. I mean, it was just, it was amazing. I took her to Disney World. You haven't lived until you've seen your dog's face on It's a Small World.
I wanted, I remember that scene. I remember that scene.
It was, and she, it was my favorite ride as a kid. So I thought, you know, would she enjoy the world? I know what, and she would, like, she was just slack jawed, like a little kid. She was like the, and it was just fantastic. I have so many lifelong memories, and I had, in a spiritual sense, there were things that occurred that never, ever should have happened, and things happened repeatedly like that.
Well, and you're able to document it. That's what, or I should say, document it.
Exactly. And ultimately, it gave more. It wasn't about me. It was about her. I was doing something for her ultimately, and it gave back to me more than I ever could have imagined.
Well, you can tell that watching it, and that's what was so amazing. It's like you see with each thing on the bucket list that you're both, you know, able to kind of live backwards. It's like, and you see the view, and you, what the thing that really struck me, it's, you know, it's gonna pull the strings of the heart of every dog owner around the world, because anybody that loves their animal can see this and just melt watching it, because, well, it's hopeful.
I hope people will see it as we, I really tried to write it in such a way, because ultimately you have this experience, you have all this footage, and then you have to come back and you have to write the film. That's the way a documentary works. You're writing it in post, not, I mean, you have a basic outline of what you want to do, or in my case, had a basic thought of maybe what we do for a couple of weeks. And then all that went out the window when she started aging in reverse. The whole arc of the film changed. Our whole life changed for 3 years at that point. The film became something completely different, much more wonderful than it ever would have been. But it was important to me than writing that it came across authentically, that we weren't trying to say, haha, look what we're getting to do. It was, hey, for anybody who wishes they could do the same thing with their dog, but doesn't have the time or doesn't have the money, you can join us. And we'll bring you along for this wonderful ride.
And that's what makes it, like, I mean, I shed a couple tears watching the movie, because there's so many times where you see Abby just enjoying it. And, you know, like, your narration too is, I mean, it was straight out like Morgan Freeman's book, man. You narrated it so beautifully.
I wish I had his voice.
No, man.
But
well, because it's your dog too, you know?
So something interesting along those lines, though, I had to be super cognizant of and careful of not making it depressing, because, you know, during the last year of her life, when we spent 90% of our time, more than that, you know, at home, or she'd come to work with me at the editing facility, and she'd be on the couch, you know, on a blanket or under a blanket behind me there while I was editing. And it was, there were all these mixed emotions, because I was going through losing a family member, because I, you know, I dearly loved her. She was like a kid to me.
Right. She was with you.
And yeah. And but the film had to be fun first, and also thoughtful, and all the things you want a film to be. Hopefully it has some layers. But it couldn't, and especially with the music, it was a challenge, because I'd put music under scenes and go, oh, I really like this. It's really tugging at the heartstrings. But I had to pull a lot of that crap out these great songs. But I had to pull out, because I was like, dude, more fun. And the music, you know, this is a conversation I can have with you, but I can't have with a lot of people. But you certainly get it, that it was real important to me that 90% of the film just be fun, and it could be feel good fun, and maybe medium tempo stuff or some up tempo stuff, but there couldn't be too much too much sad stuff or from a film perspective, it didn't work.
Well, what's so great is you were able to be that objective about it when it's like, it is your kid, it is your pet, it is your family member. And what the thing that you did was you made a total love letter to Abby, the dog. And that you can see, I'm getting chills thinking about it. And, you know, that's why I wanted to get involved too, because you see that it is such a positive message that you're putting out there. And that will make
people feel something.
People feel something.
Yeah, that's why music was such a huge part of this for me, because music obviously drives the emotion. Or it certainly tells your emotion where to go, and it takes it to the next level if you know how to do it. And if you have some people that are really good at what they do, like you are, in the soundtrack. But
one of the things I want to ask you, because it had to have been difficult. So like you said, you film all this amazing footage,
right?
And then you come back to it. I'm sure you were doing some of it when she was alive, and then you had to revisit some of that footage after she passed. Tell me what that was like, because most people won't know how hard that was for you or anybody dealing with that.
You know, honestly, it was for the first week or two, it was really hard after. I don't think I edited for at least a week after she passed. First week or two was really hard. After that, it was actually easier than it was in the last 6 months of her life, because for like the last 6 months or so, I don't know exactly what it was, but we didn't do anything. We came off the road and we came home because I just saw that she was tired.
Right.
And it wasn't from the traveling, but it was, she was tired from life. You know, she was almost 95 in people years at that point. And anybody would have been tired, and she was tired. That was the toughest part for me, because I was watching her going downhill, and anybody who's had a pet before knows that, you know, there's going to be this time when you're going to have to make that call. And it's the most, you know, they're two of the most painful things that anybody who owns and loves a pet has to do. One is calling the vet and making an appointment to put them down, because you want to make them happy. And then ultimately you're making a phone call to end their life.
Right.
And I had it was horrible. And I've dealt with that before with two other dogs, but it was even worse this time, because Abby and I had spent so much time together and done so much together. And I knew that she'd really completely, that she had a will to live, but there was just a point where, you know, where her little body was just shutting down. And that was, you know, difficult, horribly difficult. And then obviously the day that she passed, but there was also an initial relief, because right after she passed, I filmed myself in the car talking to the camera, because I felt like it was important that I have that. I sort of promised myself that when this time does come, I'm not going to do for a day or like a couple of minutes and talk to the camera in the car right afterwards, because I felt like, if nothing else, I felt like I owed that to everybody who followed us. And I was crying, but it was, but there's a point where I'm also smiling, because I was relieved for her sake.
Right.
Dogs
are so selfless, like that I'm sure Abby was living at that point for you to just have company and be with you in that moment. And they don't want to see it end, even though they're suffering. So like you did something that was like a relief.
Yeah, and she did. And she could tell I was sad. At the same time, look, Abby, for, you know, a good part of her life could be a pain in the ass, which is why I loved her. She was strong willed, and she was game for any new stuff. And, you know, we met somewhere in the middle. We compromised a lot. That's something I learned early on with her. She was a hurricane. One night I just sat down when she was about 2 years old. I sat down on the floor with her at like 10 or 11 at night and just said, basically, it was like the scene from Jerry Maguire. It was, help me help you, because this isn't working for me. And I talked to her, and instead of trying to force her to do things my way, and everything changed from that point.
Wow.
And somehow I connected with her and everything changed. And But she was strong-willed, which again was wonderful. I loved that about her,
right.
And I appreciated that. Yeah, it was an amazing experience. There's some fun stuff that happened too, like watching the film. Here's a fun little thing: you watch about a quarter of the way or a third of the way through the film, and all of a sudden the production value gets better. It was because we put the trailer together, and the trailer had hit, and we had millions of views, and I was able to go to some friends and friends of friends, and get some investors in the film. So all of a sudden we had like $30,000 we could put. Spend a little bit of that on traveling, and about 20,000 of that on gear.
Right.
And so I started shooting with a Nikon D600, which was, it's like 10 years old at this point. And a GoPro. And then all of a sudden I upgraded to a really nice Sony mirrorless camera that people really shoot films on, and,
wow.
And bought a drone and better GoPros and all that stuff. It's just so funny that some of these little quirky things that happen behind the scene to make it a better film. Here's another fun thing that, without telling too much, I reached out, I ran into Jack Hanna. And
that was one of my questions, actually, how you got him in.
And he's like, Jack Hanna is the greatest zookeeper of all time.
Right.
And I knew him years ago, but I hadn't reconnected with him. And I actually reached out to his people a couple times, and they're like, "Nah, we can't do this right now." I'm like, "All right, well, thanks anyway." It just assumed that he, got the message. And of course he never did. And I randomly ran into him doing a voiceover session in the same facility that I was doing the editing at that point, and bumped into him after, like 20 years. It's like, "How are you?" And blah, blah, and we're talking for a minute. And I'm like, he's like, "What are you doing?" And I told him about it. And he's like, "Well, if you need anything on that," I'm like, "Seriously? Yeah. I want you to pet sit Abby for the day, and I want to come film it." And he's like, "Okay. Yeah, that sounds great. That'll be hilarious." And that was it. And then he told his people, "No, I want to do this." And a few weeks later, we're at the Columbus Zoo, and Jack is taking Abby around. And
I love when you're interviewing him and you're like, "But do you have any experience?" And he's just like, "Yeah."
Yeah. I won't tell too much, but there's a fun scene, the way that scene opens up. And I felt like that would resonate with everyone who's ever hired a pet sitter before. Because that's really what he was. He was a pet sitter, and which is, again, just ludicrous as it is to have Jack Hanna pet sitting.
Let's play a little bit of the trailer so people can see how wonderful this movie is, and then we'll get back to this interview. Here's the trailer for Abby's List.
Sometimes, when we least expect, life presents, and a trip with my best friend that became the journey of our lives.
Are you in there? You're doing it, girl.
At 14, best friend Abby started going downhill fast. So we did the only rational thing we could do. Packed up the house and hit the road to do all the things any normal dog would want to do. Like sailing a yacht, seeing snow, going to Vegas, and caddying for a pro. Here she is moving while he tees off. Here she is just being graceful.
Critics are raving. It's a hit.
Away we go, driving north for 4 hours to Sequoia National Forest so she can stake her claim next to one of the tallest trees on the planet.
We'll fill it with water, and she'll take it from there.
Experience the absurdity of the greatest bucket list trip of all time.
She did it! Super Dog!
Witness the lengths one man will go for his furry best friend. And honestly, probably himself.
Abby's at the con. She's in control. Oh, take that shot, dude. There you go.
You're doing it, Ab. You're doing it, girl. What do you think? You're sailing.
I'm so excited. Oh my God.
Just a boy and his dog on a 15,000-mile cross-country quest to celebrate life, friendship, and sausage.
Everyone's favorite game show, Guess the Meat. We're in the bonus round. All or nothing. Abby, we need your answer.
No! Thanks for playing.
From coast to coast, by way of the mirage.
Movies start coming through.
A reminder that the little moments matter.
Hey, Abby, get up.
Do you have any previous experience watching animals?
Do I? Well, I don't know if you know this or not, but I've worked at Columbus Zoo for 40 years almost. So I have a little bit of experience, yeah.
Okay. So you feel fairly confident that you can handle her for the day? Well, I'm just trying to be a good parent.
Well, that's a good point.
There's a turtle. Look at the turtle.
I have to admire Mark for doing this because his dog Abby is living a life of like no dog I've ever seen.
We're on our way to It's a Small World, and I'm pretty excited because not a lot of dogs get to ride that ride. Today, Abby has the rare opportunity to meet the most famous dog in the world.
Gorge. Hello, Abby. This is your old pal Goofy. Hilton.
Abby.
Being alone with Abby again, I can't help but think about what happened in Canada. I'm watching her literally age in reverse. Because we got off the couch and gave her a reason to live.
You've never done it that fast.
She's got a bump on her face under her eye.
We're living on borrowed time now, and we know it. When we started, we'd hoped we could keep going for 3 weeks. It's been almost 3 years now. What do you think? You want to take one last trip? Mind still wanders back to our walk along that California beach, and I can't help but smile. People often ask me if Abby's still around, to which I say, you bet she is. And every last memory of our 16 years, and of course, our bucket list trip, something I'll be grateful we did for the rest of my life.
List, a documentary coming soon.
So terrific. I mean, even just watching it now, you get chill. Just it's easy to want to just get emotional watching this. How did you stay objective while making the movie?
How did what?
How did you objective?
That was actually really hard. It still is difficult. You know, I'm just finishing the cut right now. I'm working with some music and a composer and just some final tweaks. And it's still super challenging for me. Occasionally I'll reach out to a friend and go, look, I want you to watch the whole thing for me and just, you know, tell me what you think and be honest with me. You know, does it drag? Is it too depressing? Is it, you know, all that stuff, because, I know it's good in certain ways, but I want it to be really good,
great.
You know, and I'm just,
it's not
too
good.
Close
it's
to it. It's I'm too close to it for that. So, but my hope is that it'll find an audience of people who you know, love animals. And also the timing, I think, is pretty good because obviously the whole world has been, you know, has had a pretty lousy 2 years. And to have a feel-good movie, which is ultimately what it is, to have that, you know, and a road trip movie, because so many people have spent so much time at home. And really the underlying, there are a couple different messages in the film, but one of the overarching messages is live life. And I think that that's a really important message right now, especially with everybody just so sensitive and at each other's throats in a lot of ways for good reasons, but you know, we can choose to be happy and we can choose to live life. And that's what we did in the film. So that was the other thing that was just a blessing. The fact that, so we started in 2016 is when we hit the road.
Wow.
And she lived in April of 2019. And so that's before COVID hit. And so we had all of this shot and there were a few little things that I had to, you know, fill in shots of some B-roll and stuff like that. Shoot, but for the most of it, 95% of it was in the can already.
Wow.
Before COVID hit. And so you're going to know I'm a jerk, but okay. Editing a film, you just have to spend an incredible amount of time on your own. It was way too much me time. Okay. Especially after Abby passed, cause I never felt alone when she was around, but when just editing, it's just you and the project. And there's some great things about it too. But I spent, you know, about 2 years of solitude working on this film and then COVID hit. And so a part of me early on, not late, but part of me was like, cut down now. I'm like, God, I'm such a jerk.
You're like, oh, I've got company now.
Yeah, it's like misery loves company. And so for like the first couple of months, it was like, oh, this is kind of great. Everybody else has to appreciate the hell that I've gone through, you know, editing this by myself over the last year or two. And then obviously, you know, COVID became an awful lot worse and, you know, altered the life of people all over the world. But the fact that I was able to get the film in the can ahead of time was just, again, another one of those lucky things or spiritual things or whatever you want to call it. But yeah, serendipitous, the things that happened, that probably shouldn't have happened the way they did, but they did for us. So I do feel like there was a higher power looking over us and still is. Yeah, we've been accepted to the one of the best documentary film festivals in the world. Only to one of the two, which is Melbourne, Australia. And I'll start sending it out to a few more. I hope to release it in a festival, you know, late this spring or this summer. And then as soon as it's released in the festivals, then we can release it to the rest of the world. The challenge is that in order to get into the big festivals, the good ones that you want to get into, they have to be able to debut it. So,
well, what's amazing too, is you made, like I said, a love letter to your dog and you did it in such a hopeful way. And I know that's what your hope for the movie was, to have a positive message. Now, while you were doing all these cool adventures, did you ever have like these moments where you were sinking as far as knowing or seeing her kind of like start to deteriorate? It was kind of like time.
You know, there was one or two little moments on the road, but like there's a scene in the film where it's the first point that you're sort of realizing her mortality in the film, which is when we were down in Orlando and she tried to jump up on a couch and she missed her footing and she landed on the couch, but landed, you know, just landed sideways rather than on her feet. And she, you could tell she was like embarrassed. Anybody who has a dog knows they do get embarrassed, or she felt like bad. And it was a moment for her, and the camera kind of captured it too. And it was one of the first sort of changes in the film a little bit. That was one of those little moments. There weren't too many of those on the road because, again, we got off the road before it was apparent to this if she wasn't having fun or if she was deteriorating. So most of that stuff happened at home, and it was, you know, it was difficult when that happened. But at the same time, I tried to just appreciate the fact that, look, who gets to do this? I got to spend 3 years on the road with her, and now I get to spend however much time she has left at home editing a film and just being around her. She was never more than, you know, 5 or 10 feet away from me. And so I even though it was a sad time, I just couldn't help but also feel incredibly blessed.
So. I mean, you get that from the film too. It's like you, there's so much joy in your connection to your animal. And I think that's the one thing that everybody leaves with watching it. And, you know, that
I hope so.
it triggered my own emotions, because it's like, we'll watch this movie and be touched, because.
And I hope that happens. I hope we inspire people to do, a much smaller version of the same thing, or at very least they watch the film and they turn the film off and they go right to their animal, wherever their animal is, if it's not sitting next to them on the couch, and, you know, and gives their pet a big hug and,
right,
and a slice of pizza and, and takes them on the longest walk they've ever done. And maybe just gives them, even if, because like a lot of people can't do what we did. In fact, we almost didn't get to do it because I didn't have a lot of money either. Literally, I took my last $300. And we raised another, I don't know, I forget what it was, maybe $1,200 on an Indiegogo campaign, and my $300. Then I had a garage sale and sold a bunch of my crap,
yep,
which I didn't need anyway. And
your coins too, your coins. I remember.
Yeah, I took the coins, which is, you know, that really helped though. And ultimately we had about $3,000, but I didn't have any more money in the bank or anything, because I had a business, you know, I had the radio network. I had it for 10 years and it went belly up, unfortunately, right, after 10 right. years, and which was gut wrenching, but it was one of those rare times in my life where I was like, look, most of my life I've had money to do something like this, but I never had the time.
Right.
And this time I had the time, but I didn't have the money. And I went, you know what? I'm probably never going to have a moment again in my life where I actually have the time. So I'll find the money and we'll figure out a way to do this. And that was a real interesting point.
That's a courageous thing. It's like most people let that opportunity pass them by, and you struck. And that's what was so amazing. It's like you did this on a budget. You went for it without knowing if you'd be able to finish it, if she would be able to handle all these adventures. And you, that's the most beautiful part. You know, they say at all these film festivals, I don't know if you've gone to some already, but
no, I've never been to one.
But everybody says it's like the big reward, the big congratulations is that you finish the movie. And that's the one thing that, you know, most people won't know how hard it was for you to make this movie, but you sunk everything you had into it. And you can tell when you watch the movie. I have three questions I want to ask you.
Yeah. And let me say one more thing on that real quick too.
Please.
It was real important to me early on that I'd be honest and say, look, I don't have a lot of money. And it literally showed a close-up of my bank account. And so everybody know that I'm not just some rich guy who's going to take his dog on the road for whatever. It was exactly the opposite, but I made a decision that was like, I wasn't going to let money keep us from doing this. And I rethink that one because it wasn't just handed to us. The other thing, and I just want to share this real quickly, one of the best pieces of advice, I had a friend who worked on some doc films previously. And I said, you know what, I'm going to hit the road for a couple of weeks and just try to shoot a short documentary with Abby while I do a couple of things that she might like to do. And I said, do you have any thoughts for me? Because he was fairly successful. And he said, look, the best piece of advice I can give you is, let the film take you, let the story and the film take you where it takes you. I know you're going to have some preconceived notions of where you expect the story to go and where you want it to go. And you need to have that in order to produce it, but ultimately let the story take you wherever it takes you. And boy, was he ever right. You know, we did, you know, it was happening. And I didn't always understand what was happening. So I think there were forces greater than us, but there were other forces saying, come on, let's, you know, just follow your gut. And, and that's kind of what we did for 3 years. And it's sort of what I'm still doing with the film, because, with some of the things that are starting to happen. And I think it's about to have a life of its own. And I'll just probably hang on for that ride, just kind of like I did through the 3 years, going, all right, let's try this.
You know, well, you swing for the fences in the movie, and it shows.
I appreciate it. And I'm grateful that you let us use one of your songs in the film too.
Man, my pleasure. We're gonna make many more projects together like this. So
I hope so.
I wanted to ask you a 2-part question. The second question I had was, how did you shoot this? I know you shot a lot of this by yourself, but first, you flew Disneyland in Vegas, and then we'll come to how you shot this.
Okay, without giving away too much, I worked at Disneyland since, you know, I helped build Radio Disney, and so I knew a lot of people there. And I'd worked both I started in Disney World, and then they moved us out to Disneyland in California. So I knew a lot of people. I mean, I was friends with the Disney family. So I didn't call them, but I called a few fairly high up people and said, look, I'm down in Orlando. We're only going to be here for another day. We've got to try to get into the White House. can we do this? And I worked it out through a few friends who knew some people and basically figured it out that way. But I didn't know for sure if we'd be able to get through that gate until the very last moment. So the tension was real for me, hoping that I could get her in there, cause I thought she'd really enjoy it. And ultimately we did get in, and we did have, an amazing time, and she, loved it even more than I thought she would. So that was pretty excellent. The other thing that while we were down there on that trip, I took her to SeaWorld, and
I remember that.
Took her to the dolphin aquarium, and there were 20 or 30 people over to our left, and all the dolphin were ignoring all the people and went right to Abby. And it was just, again, I get chills just thinking about it, because but again, we got it on film. We lived it. It was insane. In fact, there was a point where we had to leave the dolphin aquarium because I think the people next to us were getting kind of pissed that the dolphin were ignoring their kids. That's and awesome. Just were all of them trying to get Abby's attention at the glass. It was something. It was heartwarming for me too, because it was like, wow, there's a connection here. I'm seeing it in all animals, you know. What was your other? Oh, how did I shoot it?
No, how did you do Vegas too?
We called from the road. I literally called like 4 or 5 hotels, and I got a hold of somebody at the Mirage and said, "Look, I'm shooting a film. I've got my dog. Can you give me a suite?" And they're like, "Look, we love dogs here. Hang on a second." And they gave me to a manager. They're like, "Look, I can't just give it to you. You just can't line up." I'm like, "How about if we rent the cheapest room you got, and then you upgrade us as high as you can?" He's like, "I can do that." So we're like, "All right, we'll be there in 2 hours." And we got there, and sure enough, they put us in this like $3,000 a night suite. It was insane.
Awesome. So awesome. And you know what? When you see Abby too, I think that's the scene where you're like, "Abby, put your head up." And you see her just kind of put her head up, and she's, you see that she's living like the queen, you know?
Well, it was also one of the first times I realized that she was interested in the view, because she normally, I never caught her like digging views or that sort of thing. But in Vegas, cause we were up high in the Mirage there, and I took her to this couch next to the window, the first thing we did when we got in, and you could just see her eyes just go wide. Like she couldn't believe what she was seeing. And that was, I also saw that when we went to the Grand Canyon. I was really surprised, because, you know, a lot of times she's just as happy staring at a dumpster as she is staring out at the ocean or whatever, but it was different at the Grand Canyon. Again, there was something, she was engaged and she was totally into that view, which was fascinating. And I think we captured that on film. And then I want to mention something to tag something if I have time here, that because you asked how I shot it. And there were a few times where I had a friend travel with me, like Sophie traveled with us for 3 weeks. And I had a friend, Becca, travel with me for a week to Florida and try to shoot some stuff. And again, they're not professional videographers, but I'd tell them what I was looking for, and they're smart people and knew a little bit about cameras or enough. And Sophie, you know, knew a fair amount, but anyway, and they'd shoot us doing something. And then I'd ask them to watch Abby for 10 minutes or so. And then I'd go around and shoot B-roll and get all these other shots that I knew that I needed to tell this story quickly.